you for being a Bump 2 subscriber. You help make this podcast possible, and your support is greatly appreciated. In the second part of our conversation, Molly shares more of her journey, from the days of relying on the food bank to feed her family, to the incredible success with the Pink Fund, and all the lives she's touched along the way.
And I love to tell this story because I was raised in an all-white elite community, Grosse Pointe, Michigan. We lived a mile away from Henry Ford, you know, country club life, private schools. And then I always say I traded the old quiet money of Grosse Pointe for the new loud money of Bloomfield Hills. My husband's family was very well off, and my former father-in-law, who was a lovely man, was at one time in line to be president of Ford Motor Company. In fact, he opened up China for Ford in the 80s. So I traded, you know, I traded up, I thought, financially. And I remember my clothes, I didn't go to the stores. I had a shopper. So I had a stylist, I guess you would say. And they would bring the clothes to the house. And so when I had to get rid of all this stuff because I had to assemble some cash to rent a house and to hire lawyers, I took all my clothes, the things that I knew I couldn't wear, didn't think I would wear, to this resale store. And after about, I think, 90 days, they called me and they said, well, we've sold everything, but there's a few things here. Do you want any of it? And so I drove out to this elite resale store and I picked up about three items. And one was this dress that I had paid $2,500 for in 1994. And it was an Angaro dress. And it was a long sleeve silk dress with a ruched waistline. And I slid my hand down the right sleeve of the dress where the price tag was. And it was going to be sold for $60. And I would have gotten 30 of it. So this dress that I paid $2,500 was worth $30 for me, which wasn't even going to fill up my gas tank. So I'm driving home. And I stop at this stoplight, and this little red Honda Civic pulls up on my left, and it's tiny. I still have the gas-guzzling Suburban at this point, and it's a tiny little red Honda Civic. And there's a for sale by owner side on the passenger side rear window. It says for sale by owner, $2,500. And I thought, if I ran out and tried to trade the dress for the car, the guy would look at me like I was nuts. And it was just such a wake-up call. And for a long time, I kept that dress in my closet. And my daughter, who's a celebrity wardrobe stylist out in L.A., I finally gave it to her. She wanted it. I don't know what she's going to do with it. But it was a reminder that I had placed my value in things that ultimately had no real cash value to me. But I will say that the other big lesson I learned was that I had placed all my value in my family of origin, my education, my stuff, my job, my house, my kids' private school. It was all window dressing. And none of it had to do with my character. In fact, my character was really misplaced. And curiously enough, when we had our beautiful big home, which I have to say I do miss my pool from there, but across the street, I had a wonderful neighbor whose husband had been in the White House, a chief of staff for Jimmy Carter at one point, and also he was head of McKinsey worldwide, globally, and he was an ambassador at one point. So they had a really big life. But Susie was a very understated, quiet lady, not wanting much attention. And so Susie, I would watch her, and she'd go into a room or anywhere she showed up. One of the first things she asked after making pleasantries was, how can I help or what can I do? And so I started to practice that. When my life changed, I started to practice saying, how can I help or what can I do? And that started to shift my perspective because I lost everything I thought had value. And I have to say, the first few years, I really struggled with that, you know, that who am I? I have nothing. You know, I don't have my wardrobe. I don't have my jewelry. I don't have my big house. I'm just a worthless single mom trying to stretch the milk by putting that carnation powdered milk in there. And I felt like a complete loser. In fact, when I stood in line at the food bank to feed my kids, the last time that I went, I didn't come home with any food because as I started getting closer to the front of the line, I recognized these women who were handing out the boxes of food. And I realized they were some of the moms with whom my boys went to high school. And I couldn't face them. So I turned around and left. And I sobbed. I cried the whole way home. And I was like, you are such a loser. Like, you can't even feed. You're humiliated because you can't even feed your own kids. And then, you know, you're embarrassed. That was a real wake-up call. I ended up using that story, actually, for the food pantry at a fundraiser where I would say I came out of the pantry, I told my story, and I raised $140,000 by just being transparent. And they videotaped that. And for some years afterwards, I would get phone calls from people who'd gone down to the food bank with their brownie troop or Boy Scout troop or church group or whomever. And they would call me and they would say, we've been to Gleaner's Food Pantry. And I just knew that they'd seen the video. And they just didn't know what to say. But what they really said was, thank you for what you did. Thank you for your vulnerability. We never realized that somebody like you could need food.
After all this, what do you think is important in life?
Helping others. Whoever has been placed in your life, your children, your family, your neighbors, your colleagues, the real value is in imparting your life into others. And it just has brought me so much joy. The people that we're helping are in a lot of pain. And some of them, this is the first time they've had a bump in the road. But for others, they've had multiple bumps in the road, and this is sort of the last straw. And so when we get the thank you notes from them that tell us that now they can sleep at night, or that they can go to the grocery store. And one of the ones that was somebody who said, you know, I had my mastectomy, but I told my oncologist I can't have chemo because I can't afford not to work. And she applied for help from us. And then once we paid her mortgage for 3 months, she went back and she got her chemo. And her oncologist said, what changed that? She said, the Pink Fund.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I suspect you have a lot of good stories.
We do. And that's what keeps me and our entire staff going. One of the things we do when we meet monthly to determine who we can fund. So when their files are coming, it's all processed and provided they have all the supporting and required documentation, they go to a committee of volunteers who looks at everything, and then we notify them the next day with an email that says, you've been approved for these bills, these account numbers, this address, the amount, etc. But at the beginning of those meetings, we hand out thank you notes that we've received in the last month to our volunteers to read aloud, and that's when the impact hits. When they read aloud these notes that are so powerful.
I want you to brag a little bit, because what you have built is really remarkable. Talk a little bit about some of the incredible corporate sponsors you've been able to bring in and some of the awards you've won.
Well, I'm a big vision board person, and I tell people if they could see my vision board, they'd think I was nuts. So what I don't have on my vision board is the Nobel Peace Prize, but I have other things. And in 2007, I put Ford Motor Company on our vision board. We had just started. I had been to a workshop for breast cancer survivors where they wanted us to make vision boards, and I wasn't really a fan of cutting and pasting stuff out of magazines, but I cooperated because I'd been scholarshiped for this workshop. So I thought I better, you know, do what they want me to do. So I cut out and put the Ford Blue Oval on it. And at the time, to my knowledge, Ford was the largest corporate supporter in the breast space, solely committed to Susan G. Komen for the cure. And so that was a big reach. You know, we were this tiny little charity, no employees. I wasn't being paid. We were working out of my kitchen table, well, a different kitchen table than the one I traded. But I put on my vision board. And in 2011, I decided we needed to have an event, and I wasn't going to have a walk. So we brought in a woman named Chris Carr, the author of Crazy Sexy Cancer. And while she hadn't had breast cancer, she had a diet called the Crazy Sexy Diet. And I knew that she had a tribe of followers and that we would sell out this luncheon, which we did. And Ford learned of it and sponsored it. And then in 2012, Ford decided to diversify their cause marketing partnerships by inviting some other charities to come in. And I got a phone call and I was asked to go in and share my story with their ad agency and people representing Ford. And at the time, we had just gotten donated office space. We had just hired a part-time employee to process patient files. And I had just been voted a very modest salary by the board. And our annual budget was $168,000. And I went in, kind of told the story I've shared with you, probably in a more powerful way. But in any case, Ford picked us up on the condition that we become a national organization. And that was always on my vision board, that we needed to go national, but we were going to need a sponsor or partner to do that. And then I brought in a celebrity partner, which is another long story. And Ford picked him up and designed a whole campaign around him called Time to Fight. And that campaign resulted in full page, full color, full run of press ads in Us, People, In Style, and Ladies Home Journal, published the first Friday in October 2012. We did radio, TV. It was just remarkable. We flew out to the ranch, the Montana ranch of the guy was James Denton, who had just wrapped the Desperate Housewives show, and his mother had died from breast cancer because she was a working widow when she felt a lump and knew she couldn't not work, and so she didn't get any treatment. And so we had his story, as well as his wife. His sister had just been diagnosed, and she was working as a nurse in Chanhassen, Minnesota, and she wasn't going to be able to work because she was immunocompromised. And so we had these two powerful stories, and he donated his time and image to us. And that year, our budget, we were able to give out $212,000. And the previous year, we'd given out like $44,000.
So going national really made a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And we have some amazing new partners now. Snap-on Tools. So this is the 10th year of our partnership with Ford. We have Snap-on Tools, Sigma Beauty, Colleen Rothschild, Roka Eyewear, Shorts Brewery. I'm just trying to think. We probably have about between 150 and 200 various partners at various levels. And the beauty of these partnerships is that we don't spend money advertising, but they do. So they share our value.
And that's a great partnership.
Yeah, I love it. Every time I think about spending money on advertising, that's money that can't go to pay a patient's bills.
So where is the Pink Fund going to go from here?
So we just received a grant to hire a community outreach manager, and she's doing her first 90 days. We're really going to be working more in underserved communities, both rurally and in urban areas, with individuals who may not know about us, may be culturally inhibited to ask for help. And so that's one thing. We want to ramp up our applications. The other thing is that due to COVID, diagnostic mammograms have not been happening. So the prediction is that there's going to be a huge influx of later stage disease requiring longer treatment, which means additional financial toxicities, increased need for help. And so we really need to raise more money to be able to meet that need. And that looks like it's going to last right now. They predict till 2027.
Oh, that's just terrible.
We cannot define success as beating death because death cannot be beaten. The undeniable fact of death remains, imposing and impending, regardless of our temporary victories. How we care for each other during this life is the true restoration, the definition of agency. That is the win. The success we must look for and mark and define ourselves by. Our ability to be present with each other through our suffering is what we are meant to do. It is what feeds us when the darkness inevitably looms. We cannot avoid the darkness just as we cannot evade suffering. Loving each other through the darkness is the thing to look for and to mark. It's there in the shadows where we find purpose and meaning. And I love that quote.
Love, purpose, and meaning. You know, those are three themes that come up again and again throughout all my bump interviews. And I think they're very profound. And particularly living in such a materially oriented world, although maybe COVID has impacted that a bit, I think we need to find these higher human qualities, if you will, in order to enjoy a quality life.
Well, I think that COVID is also, like cancer, a great awakening. Unfortunately, it's become politicized. But anytime we lose control of everything we think we had control of, right? So in my old life, I thought, oh, my husband is really wealthy. He's self-employed. He has a degree from Harvard. I have $50,000 a month to run our household. You know, my kids are healthy. They're in private school. I have a big house, nanny, housekeeper, gardener. I mean, I felt like I had all that in control, and then it all went away. Well, that is just stuff. But when all these external forces come into our life over which we don't have any control, so COVID is a cancer of its own, you know, and it's affected, it's a global effect. And we've all had to adjust and pivot. And what's interesting for the Pink Fund is that COVID really highlighted the need for our services. I say that, you know, our tagline is real help now. And I wanted to say we are essential, but that is really the case. We are essential to these families who really aren't going to make it through without our help. I mean, they might make it through, but they might file a medical bankruptcy. They might curtail their treatment protocol. They might, in the most egregious case, suffer an earlier mortality. We talked about, you know, some people say cancer is a gift or they're, you know, change their life. I just say that these things are an awakening to us, these things over which we have no control, whether it's a health diagnosis, a job loss, a divorce, COVID, death of a family member. Those are all big bumps in the road. And how do we navigate that? You know, if you think about a bump in the road kind of impeding your ability to move forward in some way, as we talked earlier, can you step over it? Can you kick it out of the way? Can you walk around it? Or maybe you just stand behind it for a while and think about, what's my next move? Sometimes that bump in the road, you're supposed to turn back and go the other way. Right? It may be a warning sign, like...
It's hard to know what to do at the time. I think we all stumble with these big life changes. And I don't think there's only, I think there are many paths forward, and you do the best you can.
And some people, Pat, aren't equipped to do the best they can. You know, that is another reality. There are educational barriers. There are cultural barriers. There are racial barriers. There are financial barriers. There's so many barriers that people face that make it really hard for them to do the best they can, and they need to be propped up. So when I talk about our work at the Pink Fund, I think this is the best visual. If you've ever played Jenga, you know, with that tall tower. Okay. So imagine you've got your life is this tall tower, it's Jenga, and it's all solid and under control, and all of a sudden something happens, like it's a cancer diagnosis, and so one of the rectangle pieces on the bottom, not in the middle, is pulled out immediately. You know, your tower is a little bit compromised. And then you find out that what your treatment protocol is and what your insurance won't cover, and another piece is pulled out. And then you find out that you probably are going to miss work so many days, which means no income, and another piece is pulled out. And then you find out, oh, I have all these deductibles. Well, gee, when I picked my insurance plan, I picked it based on my monthly premium. I didn't really look at the deductibles because I didn't think anything would ever happen to me. And so now you find out that, oh, I have a deductible of $7,000 a year, pull out another piece, and then I'm going to lose my hair, and then I have to make all these decisions. And then all of a sudden, this tower of your life that you have so carefully built and engineered to stay upright is starting to wobble. And it's in jeopardy of collapsing. And so what we do at the Pink Fund is we're not going to fix that tower, but we put scaffolding around it. We're just going to try to hold it in place until you can build your life back. And at the same time, the other piece about the tower is that the pressures keep mounting. Because, you know, when you play Jenga, you pull the piece out, you have to keep putting it on the top, right? So that just keeps adding more pressure to you. So not only are you losing all these things, but the pressure is increasing in your life. And so when we come alongside and we say, we're going to take care of you for 90 days, we've got the scaffolding around you. We're going to give you some time to breathe. We're going to give you some time to figure out your next step. That is a huge relief.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.